It's great to welcome back Professor James McKenney. And a few weeks back, we had a bit of a conversation about Comet 17P, Comet Holmes. And Jim, welcome back here as we talk about this unprecedented moment with a very unusual event in the heavens, talking about your science and this area of your expertise. Welcome back.
Thank you, Brad. Good to be back.
Let's review just a bit of the history in terms of this comet, October 24th, 25th. This comet changed dramatically. Your understanding of the universe, really like no one else, really explains and gives us some sense of perspective of what has happened and why it happened. We had some off-air conversations talking about this. Let you take the podium from here in the 50,000-watt classroom of Professor McKenney.
Well, yeah, October 23rd it started, and like you say, through the next 2 days, this comet started to brighten, dramatically becoming over a million times brighter than it was a couple days ago. So this is totally unprecedented for in a comet that's quite far out in the solar system, beyond the orbit of Mars. And certainly not a comet that anybody expected to do this. And it was first noticed by amateurs. There was actually an amateur astronomer in Minnesota who did some of the early observing, and then as the world turned, watching from Japan, and then around the world, but by the end of the next day, a lot of photos had already been posted on the internet. But this comet became literally, physically, bigger than the sun. And what was funny, of course, this is what happens universally when something like this happens. Astronomers are kind of puzzled as to why this would happen and why it would get so big, why this comet looked the way it did. The nucleus, of course, is a solid object. Standard astronomy calls it a dirty snowball, but basically, we've never, in multiple trips out to comets, we've never seen any snow or ice on a comet nucleus. They've just been hot, dry rocks, and that's what I predicted they would be back in when I was doing my theoretical work decades ago. And in fact, the point here is that we are actually seeing a small planet, a minor planet, developing before our very eyes, because what really happened is at that time Mercury, Venus, Mars, and this little comet all aligned electrically with the sun. And it's like we talk about that bug zapper effect, where the bug flies between the grids in a, like the mosquito backyard bug killer. That
the bug zapper.
Everybody in Minnesota is
we're familiar with those, aren't we?
Yeah. And so anyway, it's the same effect, and that's why the comet all of a sudden became very bright. And astronomers thought, well, this will just go away. But the comet is still up there, still very big and still very much there.
Absolutely. Talk about that triangulation of the planets. And we had spoken off the air prior to our program, that first program on Comet 17P, Comet Holmes, in speaking about that electrical alignment, why it was significant in terms of it lighting up as quickly and as brightly as it did during that time.
Well, all of the planets have a magnetic tail. They call them magnetic tails. Actually, what's going on is the planets move in this electric field around the sun also, but we're in stable circular orbits. But everything in the solar system is discharging this capacitor around the sun. And so we think of Earth, if you stood back and looked at the solar system from a distance, Earth and Venus and Mars and especially this little comet would all be just specks of dust out there. But when they discharge this capacitor, their physical size is very small comparatively, but their electrical size is huge. And these take the form of very long tails extending out away from the sun. So Earth has one of these. In fact, our electrical tail reaches almost all the way to Mars.
Hmm.
And the electrical tail of Venus actually reaches all the way to Earth and beyond. And the electrical tail of Mercury extends almost all the way to Venus. So what happens, and these are literally discharging that capacitor. So when two of them line up, that's significant. If three of them line up,
mm-hmm.
that's really significant. But when you had actually four of them, when you include the comet itself, you had Mercury, Venus, Mars, and the comet all aligning.
Hmm.
And that is very significant. It's a somewhat rare event, but these things do happen. But just at that time, the comet nucleus wandered into the same path, and zap, there it goes. And when it was first discovered in 1892, there was a similar brightening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the original founder, discoverer, his name was Holmes, that's why he saw it. So at any rate, very interesting, just coincidence or, you know, the type of thing that in the solar system is bound to happen sooner mm-hmm. or later.
Absolutely. You know, I want you to talk a bit here this morning, because as I witnessed this event and read the stories early on, and then as I even connected some of the dots because of how you've educated us about your science and understanding, your books, and your resources, which we'll talk more about, and we'll talk more about Jim's website in case you've not heard him before. But there is a unique understanding when you talk about this alignment and what has happened here, and the fact that this, because of your forte with comets, nothing has really given us a visual example quite like Comet Holmes has when it comes to an understanding of J. McKinney science.
Yeah, well, the standard astronomy, you know, the dirty snowball comet model
right.
has failed repeatedly. And even after they've gone up to a comet nucleus very close, up to right next to one, and they've even projected objects that go in and hit the comet nucleus, there's no ice or snow on these. There's just dust and powder and dry. They're hot. They're much too hot to even have ice.
Right.
Yet they keep talking about this. And it's like, why are you talking about, you know, it's like going up to an elephant and calling it a duck. It just doesn't make any sense.
I love that explanation.
Well, yeah, it's really
going up to an elephant and calling it a duck, and it's really true.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. But this object, when this very first happened, the standard mouthpieces for the NASA and the Hubble Space Telescope, they said they had already measured the nucleus of this comet to be 2.1 miles across. And I knew immediately that, you know, because I'm familiar with astronomy and
right.
and how they make measurements, and especially at this location out beyond Mars, they said they had used the Hubble Space Telescope to make this measurement. Well, I knew that at that distance, the Hubble Space Telescope could not resolve something 2 miles across. In other words, one pixel on the Hubble Space Telescope camera at that distance would be about 30 miles across. So
yeah.
There's no way they measured this directly. And what they did, and I posted this on my page right away, and that's the thing. I was posting this information like immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this comet nucleus must be much larger. And I just followed the logic that I knew that these scientists would follow. They would assume that it was a white nucleus, and it gave off so much light. So with one pixel of the Hubble Space Telescope, they would measure the amount of light coming in. And they assumed that the nucleus was white, and they determined a certain size based on that brightness. In other words, how large an object would it take with this brightness, with this what they call albedo, the reflectivity of the sun, like does it reflect like 90 or 100% of the sunlight? something very white would have a very high albedo, near one, you know, in other words, reflecting all the light from the sun. But in fact, comet nuclei are black, and very black. So that would mean, if you assume that there was very little light coming off the surface, the object would have to be very much larger than 2 miles across to produce the same amount of light. And that I stated that, and it was actually only about a week ago that they released the method by which they determined the size of the nucleus, and sure enough, they used a brightness measurement. And so it really means that this object could be as much as 100 miles across, which is a minor planet.
Mm-hmm.
So no longer do we have some little 2 mile across thing out there, but at least 30 miles across, and possibly as much as 100 or even larger miles across. And so now the tail material has been accumulating over the past month now, because we're almost a month since this started.
Absolutely.
So this object is growing, and what we have is a new planetary member of the solar system, a small minor planet. And there are two things happen when it accumulates this material. The orbit becomes circularized, meaning it's slowly becoming a planet just like the other ones, and its orbit is being reduced. So the made some projection is that someday in the distant future, this, in fact, could become a moon of Mars. And that's very significant, because Mars has two small moons, and this could become a new one.
Hmm. Would that affect the Earth?
Well, no, this is way out there, and the thing is, it's hard to project. Instead of being captured by Mars, it could actually change its orbit and have it come in, so it would come in near Earth. So I mean, we don't know where it's going to end up.
I just wonder if it would affect this planet at all in terms of, let's say, if it became a moon of Mars, or let's say if it got closer to the Earth. Some interesting possibilities anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, you just can't predict these orbits. The ancients were very good at predicting orbits and schedules of celestial objects, and they called comets the lawless ones, because they didn't obey the laws of celestial mechanics.
Right.
And we, in fact, know that from modern studies, too, that comets wander in their orbits unpredictably. So that means that you can't predict with even the best computer analysis, you can't predict where this thing's going to go. And potentially Mars could grab this thing and throw it off in our direction. You know,
interesting.
It'd be impossible to tell that right now.
Yeah.
But I'm going to continue watching it. Right now, if you go outside, we've got a very, very full moon tonight. Mm-hmm. And so it just washes out everything in the sky. It's very difficult to observe this this comet on a night like tonight. But in about 4 or 5 days, the moon will be pretty much away and out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get another good look at this comet.
It is fading, though, now. I mean, the dynamic that we saw in terms of its tremendous increase in its brightness and illumination is not what it was, and it is diffusing a bit.
Well, yeah, and there are two things that are happening. When it first became bright, you could actually see it. You could just go out, and in the evening, even with the sky not completely dark, you could see this comet just with your eyes. It looked like a star. But then when you use binoculars or a small telescope, you could really see it as a huge object about the size of the full moon.
Mm.
And the but what's happened is it's actually gotten bigger but less bright.
Okay.
So it's not as bright as it was originally, but it's actually bigger and continues to grow. It developed a tail finally. So kind of like Mickey Mouse, a star with a tail.
Yeah.
The comet developed a tail, which it had the last time I was able to take a good look at it.
Yeah. How often do comets become small planets like this particular comet?
This is very rare.
Okay.
Most comets come through the solar system. They're on elliptical orbits. They come through the solar system every, once in a great while, and they only last for a couple days, sometimes a few hours, but at most a week or two. So for a comet to actually brighten up and last for a month is very unusual.
Yeah.
Usually it's very short. Comet Hale-Bopp in the 90s, I was reporting on that comet on a regular basis, and it stayed around for a period of almost 6 years, totally unprecedented.
Wow.
But this one, my belief with Comet Holmes is this is going to be here to stay, and astronomers are going to have a increasingly difficult time talking about why is that little thing still there? Why is that little snowball still, the size of the sun?
Yeah. You know, there's a range of understanding when you talk about old science, new science, and what you have come to understand and educate us about. And you talk about your science and what you've written so passionately and clearly about and made it, as I've said in many of our programs, very user-friendly. There are those, though, that have taken your material and maybe certainly shortchanged what we would call the integrity of your understanding of what you've done over a lifetime of work and research. And if you kind of take us through that continuum of those who have no connection to it to, let's say, the pseudo-imitators of what you understand in terms of the electrical nature of the solar system, Jim.
Well, yeah, one of the problems when a person like myself becomes successful, the copycats, so to speak, come out of the woodwork. And unfortunately, what we have today are people with no scientific background, and unfortunately, the Internet gives them a platform to pretend that they're someone they're not. And the end result is a lot of misguided, very bad science, very bad trying to lead the public.
Yeah. They take the nuggets of truth, but they don't really develop it. For me, that's always the telling sign. It's like it's shortchanged somewhere, whereas if one reads your books, even if we're not into math and physics, you've made it user-friendly enough. It's like one of the things I always look for is you connect all the dots, and you get a complete picture. And, you know, some of these other individuals, it's like they go so far, and it's almost there, but it isn't really there.
Well, what you find is they keep repeating themselves.
Right.
And over again, they're kind of like Johnny One Notes. And it's like if anybody read a book.
Yeah.
Or if somebody read, say, a general book on relativity.
Mm-hmm.
Or they go, the light travels at a certain speed, and they could say that. But that's all they could ever say about it because that's all it said in the general book they read.
Right.
Or they try and read other things. But then they learn some terminology, but they totally misuse it and misdirect it. And, for example, there's some kind of yo-yos running around the Internet right now, beating a drum. But they have ridiculous statements, and from what they're saying, the tail of the comet would point towards the sun.
Hmm.
You know, and they don't even know it because they're not scientists, yet they try and pretend like they are. In general, you just ignore those people, but warn the public that these clowns are out there. And, as anything on the Internet, buyer beware.